plane. It's been circling around here for the last 10 minutes. It's probably a search plane.
I beg it's the boat for the signal flyer.
Oh, you're looking at me. Suppose this is for roasting marshmallows?
Yeah.
Never mind the wood. I'll handle the wood. You go get a radio. It's probably been trying to contact us.
Yes, sir, the radio.
When it premiered in September of 1963, TV critics hated it, and even the president of CBS was said to be embarrassed by it. But the viewers loved it, and Gilligan's Island was an immediate hit. 25 years later, Gilligan's Island is a cult classic. It's still on TV, in seemingly eternal syndication, and seen by about 2 million viewers every day. Sherwood Schwartz was the man who created Gilligan's Island. He also created The Brady Bunch and wrote for The Joan Davis Show, The Red Skelton Show, My Favorite Martian, and many other TV and radio programs. Sherwood Schwartz has just written a book about his biggest success. It's called Inside Gilligan's Island. Schwartz had a hard time getting this lucrative series on the air. He remembers how he first pitched it to the network executives.
I said that it was about a group of people, very diverse. And in order to establish a diversity of characters, I went not only to characters, but to semi-caricatures. Maybe that's a harsh word, but people who are vivid are obviously more memorable to a viewing audience. So that it wasn't sufficient to make Thurston Howell III very wealthy. I made him a billionaire. And it wasn't sufficient to have a beautiful redhead. I made her a movie star. And it wasn't sufficient to have Gilligan just be a little ignorant. I made him very stupid. And so forth for all the characters. And to take all these people who were so diverse and so separated by their own backgrounds and put them together, there was an immediate clash of all sorts of baggage from previous history of each of the castaways.
I'll tell you what I would have worried about had I been a network executive or had I been you, that it would be impossible to generate enough story ideas for 7 castaways on the same island week after week. Didn't you worry about that?
I didn't worry about that because before I ever went to a network, I felt I had solved that problem.
How?
I got a huge roll of butcher paper, this kind of white paper that they wrap things in. I wrapped it around this whole workroom, this my writing room, and I got a felt-tip pen and wrote 31 storylines. If you could do that in a few weeks, circling yourself in a room, certainly with the help of other writers, you could manage to persist for several seasons. And by the way, all 31 were eventually done as half-hour episodes.
Now, the network was concerned that if you didn't explain within the story the premise of Gilligan's Island each week, that the audience would be lost and they wouldn't understand why there were 7 castaways that couldn't get off this island. You suggested that you could take care of that by writing a theme song that would open the show each week that would explain the whole story. That was a very clever idea, I think.
Well, it was a way to do exactly what they feared, which is dead, dull exposition. You could satisfy that particular requirement of why are they there and why they can't get off and so forth with a bouncy theme song.
You suddenly found yourself having to overnight deliver to them a theme song. So before you came up with the song that we actually hear now on Gilligan's Island, you wrote another song, and I was wondering if I could get you to sing the lyrics for the first song that you wrote.
Oh, I don't remember those lyrics. I remember this. It was a Calypso song. Tourists come, tourists go, tourists rocking to and fro. It was like that. It was Harry Belafonte time, certainly not Sherwood Schwartz time.
So instead you ended up with a parody of a sea shanty.
Exactly, exactly.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and sure. 5 passengers set sail that day for a 3-hour tour, a 3-hour tour. The weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the minnow would be lost, the minnow would be lost.
The ship's aground on the shore of this uncharted desert isle, with Gilligan, the skipper too, the millionaire and his wife, the movie star, the professor and Mary Ann, here on Gilligan's.
Then the episodes even close with a close theme that explains that they're never going to get off this island and you should join us every week to watch their continuing adventures.
You bet, because it's my contention and my belief that a puzzled audience can't laugh and can't be interested. You have to let them know the path you're taking them down. And if you say, these people are locked here, tune in next week and see the new trouble they're in, and you promise them that, and you deliver, they will be your friends.
Gilligan's Island was taken off the air pretty suddenly, and I guess you didn't even have time to do a rescue episode. That means you were able to, a few years later, do a special two-hour rescue episode.
That's exactly.
But in hindsight, would you have preferred doing a half-hour series ending?
The historic point, is that it was better the way it turned out. Because when I did the two-hour show called Rescue from Gilligan's Island, that allowed me, the fact that I didn't do a final episode, allowed me to make a comeback with that show, which led to two more two-hour shows. And I'm currently negotiating for a show called Gilligan's Island, The Second Generation, which is about the sons and daughters of the original castaways.
And how do they end up being castaways themselves? Or are they maybe, am I being presumptuous? Are they not castaways?
No, you're being correct. Thurston Howell IV takes Ginger's daughter and Gilligan's son and the skipper's son, and they all set out to find the island where their parents had spent so many years. And they themselves... as you laughed, and rightly so, a storm comes up and they find themselves on this island. But they're rescued by their own parents. It all works out happily.
You also wrote episodes for Ozzie and Harriet. So maybe you can answer the question about Ozzie that everyone in America always wanted to know. What did he do for a living?
He made a lot of money. Which is a good thing to do for a living. No, I wrote that show in radio. I didn't write it in television.
Okay. So you're off the hook.
Yes. He didn't have a job in radio either.
And maybe I'm being presumptuous here, but you strike me as someone who grew up in an urban area, Jewish, and here you are creating the prototype for what became the ultimate suburban, goyish sitcom.
So I'm told. Yes, it's you're talking about the white bread Brady Bunch?
Well, that too, yeah. I was even thinking of Ozzie and Harriet and the Brady Bunch.
Look, I have trouble. My rabbi insisted that it would have been a better name, Goldstein's Island. What's wrong with that? Or the Bernstein Bunch, for that matter.
And why didn't you write the Bernstein Bunch?
I deal in a country where there are... I must say, above all, I feel I am commercial in the sense that I like my work to appeal to many people, and that's my satisfaction. So to aim at the biggest, broadest base of audience, you're better off doing the Brady Bunch than the Bernstein Bunch.
Well, let me thank you for talking with us, and I wish you a happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very much.
Sherwood Schwartz's new book is called Inside Gilligan's Island. It's published by McFarland. This is Fresh Air.